Welcome to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Each week on this program, Jeff and his guests share their expertise, personal anecdotes, and the latest industry news to keep you in the loop. Now, to provide you with insight and help you navigate the consistently changing world of real estate lending, here is your host for The Mortgage Voice, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for tuning in to the show this week. And as every week on the show, we try to bring to you information about mortgages and real estate and the things you're going to need to know and do if you want to buy a house, really even selling a house. I mean, in today's market, selling a house is not as simple as it might have been in years past. There are a lot of different disclosures, especially with COVID around and the like. We're coming into the winter season, whereby usually house selling cools off, and usually rates by the nature of the house purchases cooling off, the rates usually lower. This year, we're probably going to see rates rise, and the reason for that is what we've talked about ad infinitum since the beginning of COVID, is when this will stop, i.e., the buying of mortgage-backed securities and the buying of treasuries by the Fed, what they call QE, QE4, or stimulus. That's what they call it now. I mean, it's all the same. It's really artificially keeping markets fed with cash, and i.e. holding the interest rate down so that borrowing is made more easy and more plentiful, therefore access to credit for people who have a job, people who want to borrow, is plentiful. And that, as a result, keeps the bond market where it is, where it has been for quite some time, although we have seen the 10-year really go up. Last few days it hasn't, but for the last month or so, we've seen it climb from really in the low 1.31 up to 1.5 to almost 1.6, 1.62, which was the high watermark on Tuesday of last week. So we will probably see that particular interest rate on bonds continue, or the yield really on bonds continue to rise. And I say that because there's so much uncertainty in the economic scene of what's happening out there in the real world. For those of you who follow it, the real world is, you know, how many people are getting a job, how many people are paying taxes, what's the outlook on inflation, what is the look at China and what's happening there. I'd like to get into that a little bit later on. And certainly what's happening locally, politically. We seem to be in a state whereby it used to be that we would say, and I often say that it mirrors, that politics, right, is always local, right? And I always say real estate is also always local. Well, the new catchphrase, because of the advent of the social media and the internet, and by the way, I've had the worst turn of events on social media that anybody can have, and everybody in my listening audience will know exactly what that means. You say the wrong thing, or you compliment the wrong person, and oh my gosh, the backlash. It's like you've been whipped by a scorpion, you know, stung. But that being as it is, you know, everybody moves on, and being that politics is no longer local, it's what we call national, we would also say that real estate is also national, i.e. what happens in a different state, in a different town, probably affects what goes on in your state, in your town. The rates that happen to the people in Massachusetts are going to affect the people with rates in New Mexico, because there is no area by which we're not in knowledge of. So if there's an event that happens negatively to affect the markets, whether it's the stock market, the real estate market, or the bond market, what we're going to see is a negative effect on rates. Risk being what there are, banks and certainly anybody who lends money is going to want to protect themselves from any adverse risk. And that's what happens a lot of times when we have this, the social media environment we're in, as well as global connection to anything going on everywhere. For example, we have seen oil climb. Now, $80 for a barrel of oil is not the worst thing we've seen over the past 5 to 10 years. There was a time when oil was $140 a barrel, but there was also a time in the very, you know, close past, not the distant past, like within the last 6 months, where oil was at $40 a barrel. Now, how that affects you as a consumer is because when you go to the pump and you've got to shell your dollars out to buy gas, you look at your paycheck and you look at the way food prices have been going up, and you look at the way, obviously, the gas prices have been going up as a result of this $80 a barrel, and you're angry. You're angry because your dollar doesn't go as far, which means if you're in the market for a house and you see rising rates, as they have been rising, I agree, not greatly, but you see rates on a 30-year fix go over 3%, whereas 3-4 weeks ago, maybe they were at 2.75%, that hurts. That means you can borrow $50,000 less when you're borrowing money. And in these prices, the way real estate is right now, especially in places that we have licenses, Malibu Funding is the sponsor for the show, and I say we because as a partner with Malibu Funding, we sponsor this show. But Malibu Funding, that company, is in 13 different states, soon to be 14, from Florida to Washington State, from Illinois down to New Mexico. So all of these places have seen their particular rise in rates as a result of what's happening in whether it's the Fed bond buying season or whether it's the price of oil or whether it's the price of food. The dollar value that you have to spend on a mortgage shrinks. But has the real estate prices shrunk? We're going to have a few people on today to talk about that, because the real issue here is affordability. And how much affordability does your dollar bring today, and how fewer size of a home or the cost of a home, how much less of that can you afford today than you did 3-4 months ago? That's a real big important. Let's get to some nitty-gritty nuts and bolts. 3.2% is the 30-year fix. 2.6% is the 15-year. 2.85% is the FHA. 3.15 is the jumbo. And 2.80 is the 5-1 ARM. Those are all averages of what we see across the country. In your lending area, you may see some different things. By the way, the NMLS number for the company I work for is 79620. And the 10-year, as I said, is at 1.583 as of today. And that means that if you were looking at the 10-year as a way by which you can gauge whether your interest rate is going to go up, this indication, based on the way last week went and the week before was, yes, it does say that that's going to happen. Now, why do the rates do what they do, and how they do what they do, based on whether we're artificially holding rates down because the Fed is buying, as I said, during the COVID pandemic for the last 18 months, Fed has been buying $120 billion a month, but that taper is going to start, and by the way, it's middle of October, so it's going to start soon, probably November, maybe December. But we've seen jobs reports go up and down. I mean, we had a couple hundred thousand people employed in the second week of October, where we were looking to see 500,000 people last month. So we will see jobs reports go up and down, and there is still a conundrum to that. And I mention all this stuff because the uncertainty in the market affects the market, and that affecting the market affects you because you're going to pay more. Uncertainty means risk. Risk means bad, which means you have to protect yourself by charging more to you, the consumer. When you have a chance to lock, make sure you're checking with your particular loan officer or go to any mortgage site and see what the current rates are for program like the one you're using. I mentioned 5 programs here. There are many programs, maybe 30 out there that you might be able to get into. Certainly there's the non-QM programs, bank statement programs, DSR programs, which means that you look at the rental on your property that you want to buy, and that itself can cover the debt load. All of this is going to affect your decision about how you need to prepare yourself for really the sticker shock when you see that real estate price. Now, I'm going to talk to a couple of people, as I said, from around the country, down in New Mexico and out in Colorado, certainly here in Southern California. All these people have different ideas about what it is that you want in terms of your loan product. But there's a definite to what your real estate is going to cost when you buy in those certain areas. So we're going to check with those people. And I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for tuning into the show, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. We'll be right back with more in just a moment. For more information on today's topic, email Jeff Barton at info@malibufunding.net. Now, back to The Mortgage Voice with your host, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for tuning in, for listening to the show, trying to get some of my opinion on what's going on in the world and how it might affect your mortgage rate. There's all kinds of things that affect your mortgage rate. And really, most people, when they go out and shop for mortgages, that's what they think about most. They think about the what it's going to cost, what are the exact costs, and how much is it going to spend out to on 30 years, 360 payments. There's a lot of other reasons why you'd want to shop for a mortgage, different products, different things that you may need, which the guy down the street might not need. But to clarify a lot of that, we bring experts to the show. Part of that, what we do today, we'll bring on Richard Green, and he's with New Mexico Mortgage Company. He's been on the show several times before. Always appreciate it. He's from Albuquerque, New Mexico. Richard, how are you?
I'm doing great, Jeff. How are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you very much. Off air, we were talking about the medical ills and woes of the elderly. What's that about? Except that a lot of people who are either selling their house or moving to a smaller house are in the same kind of boat. What are you recommending for these types of borrowers who are a scale-down borrower?
Depending on where you really are in that market, I bring up reverse mortgages.
Okay.
We do purchase reverse mortgages, which in this market it's gotten a little more popular.
Right.
And it might be an option, but traditionally it would be looking at just a conventional loan, a 20% down loan, and a lot of folks who were really looking at, with the rates being so low,
right,
not really starting over at a 30-year low, maybe looking at a 20. There's even some interesting, you can do a 28-year loan or a 27-year loan today, not having to do that full 30-year loan. If you're coming out of a mortgage where you've already paid the bank years and years of interest,
right.
to scale it back just a couple of years so it doesn't affect your payment too greatly. So that's been a real interesting option here of late. So that's definitely something that's to discuss or would discuss with somebody in that situation.
So if you're in a 30-year and you've paid 5, you could get into a 30-year amortized loan but only pay it for 15 years and then pay a balloon, or is it more something else?
No. They're fully amortizing. They're fully amortizing.
I see.
Like coming through this refi boom that we're just coming out of,
right,
folks that maybe already had a 30-year and they'd already been in it for 3 years, so they're kind of young in it, we can actually do a 27-year AM loan.
Right,
so
okay.
It amortizes for 27 years with no balloon. Or in that same breath, just do a 15-year amortization or a 20-year amortization, but no balloon payments.
Now, the economy being what it is, inflation going where it's going, what do you see in terms of house prices down there, and how's it affecting your market in terms of mortgages?
Well, so the Albuquerque, for maybe the first time ever in a very long time, has had an extreme seller's market, where if there was anything decent on the market, they were getting multiple offers, 10 to 15 multiple offers. There was our supply in all of our multiple lists, which is normally the potentially, I don't know the number exactly offhand, but 2,500 homes, 2,000 to 4,000 homes is kind of a normal for the Albuquerque Metro listing MLS service.
Right.
At one point, it was down to 400 homes in all of MLS, all of the Albuquerque area for a million people. So it was a frenzy. That has now definitely relaxed, and I think there's about 1,200 homes currently listed on the MLS. But a big seller's market that is relaxing, and it did really drive prices up, but fortunately the balance of interest rates were super low, so it was still manageable for a lot of borrowers.
Now, when you look at that and you look at trying to get loans for properties that are rising, obviously at 10 to 15% over the last 2 years per year, that means that the comps available aren't quite what you need. Are you having any issues with appraisals?
Well, we were fortunate. Not our issue with appraisals have been turn times rather than values. Just with the, I'm not sure if any of your listeners kind of understand, but appraisals, years ago, mortgage companies would have a relationship with an appraiser,
right.
An independent contractor. We'd call them up, he'd go do the job. And we were fortunate that they take the big houses, the little houses, the ones that were out of town or in town or needed work or didn't need work because they were an independent small business that really wanted to earn the business of the mortgage company. But nowadays, with appraisal management companies, it's we are not the client anymore. The borrower or the homeowner is not the client. And,
right.
And it's really almost put out for bid. And where the appraisal community is small, and so it's been a challenge to get appraisals, to get them on time, and to get them at a reasonable price. We've been bidding. We paid $1,200 for a single-family
yep.
residential appraisal in Albuquerque. It's almost common anymore.
Yeah, it's one of the things that I've noticed all through where we do business, and that's across the U.S., that appraisals have become, you know, the bottleneck, really, of what we're trying to get a close on a 30-day purchase, and you went into a contract thinking, okay, I've won the bid, and now I'm going to do it, but it ties up in the appraisal, and then everybody gets all, you know, nervous and excited, and you get those phone calls late at night, what's going on? Can't be fun, can't be very efficient either.
No, it is. It's kind of, I don't want to call it terrible, but it's
yeah.
kind of a terrible bottleneck because there's only, to become an appraiser, I'm sure it's similar around the country, but my understanding here in New Mexico is you have to internship for 2,000 hours for free, glorified for free to become an appraiser. So you have to spend a year or two of your life practically working for free for another appraiser. Before you become certified, so there's just such a limited number of people even going into the industry, going into the field.
Wow, that's something. Okay, let's move on to something more exciting to talk about. Give me an idea, what are some of the programs that you see popular and some of the ways that you might be able to help a borrower get into a home?
Albuquerque is, we have a very large Kirkland Air Force Base, and then in New Mexico
yep.
we have several other Air Force bases around. So we do see a lot of veterans. We see a lot of veterans that retire here. We see a lot of veterans simply because in one fashion or another, the United States has been at war for the last 20-plus years.
Yep.
So there's lots of veterans. We love helping veterans. It's a great program for us. It's wonderful rates. They have some flexibility on qualifying, and we have some programs. So we do a good bit of VA zero down. And then, interesting enough, outside of Albuquerque, in the bedroom communities, they're considered rural, and you can do a USDA loan
right.
Zero down. And that's a pretty cool program that we tend to use a lot as well. Those are both zero-down programs that are very competitive. And the USDA one is you have to be in a certain area.
Yep.
Not all areas qualify, but it's a cool program. We do a good bit of those as well.
Okay, so put on your prognostication hat and let us know, what do you think are happening? Obviously, we've seen the 10-year bond go up. We've seen, you know, some other indications that the taper may be happening. How do you think it's going to affect rates? And if it does affect rates in the negative, do you think we'll see more houses on the market as a result?
That's a great question, Jeff. I mean, your guess is almost as mine.
Oh, you're the expert.
With the world being so small, though, well, let me preface it. With the world being so small, being
right.
4 or 5 weeks ago, when the huge Chinese real estate conglomerate
yep.
was defaulting on their bonds, and then now with there's so many things that interact with our interest rates.
Yep.
Even the supply chain is. I read a really interesting article how, of course, that intertwines with our whole daily life anymore.
Yep.
I do think they're going up. I do think they're going to bump up. With the tapering, with the government tapering, would not buy. I'm not sure if listeners realize, but for many years, starting back practically in 2008 after the housing crash and meltdown, but so basically the United States government has been buying United States debt and basically subsidizing. That's
yep.
why we have low interest rates on some. That's a huge contributor of why we have super low mortgage rates is
yep.
because, yep, the U.S. government is buying U.S. government debt. And so, and of course, they want to keep spurring the economy, but they do have to probably bump up a little bit more. So at the end of the day, rates, I think they're going to go to 4, and they're going to settle in, which is still a wonderful rate.
Yes, it is.
Historical rate.
Yeah. I agree. Hey, listen, Richard,
yeah.
thanks very much for coming on the show. I agree with everything you just said.
Fun.
Could you shout out a way people down in your area can get a hold of you? Because you're not only knowledgeable, but been in the industry a long time, probably help a lot of people out.
Yep, we'd love to talk. So, Richard Green at New Mexico Mortgage Company. We're here in Albuquerque, New Mexico. A quick, easy phone number is 505-292-3200. And then you can also, of course, find us on the internet at nmmortgagecompany.com. NM for New Mexico, nmmortgagecompany.com. Thank you.
Richard, thank you very much once again coming on the show. Let's do it again soon.
Yep, it's a pleasure. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye. That's Richard Green, New Mexico Mortgage Company. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. We'll be right back with more in just a moment. For more information on today's topic, email Jeff Barton at info@MalibuFunding.net. Now, back to The Mortgage Voice with your host, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for tuning in, listening each and every week. We try to bring to you guests and information that will help you decide whether you want to buy that house, sell that house. Maybe there's some refinance you can still get going on. By the way, last week, 52% of the mortgages that were originated refinanced. So if people say refinances are dead, don't you believe it. There is still a great loan out there for you, especially if you have a special need. If you're one of these people that just isn't a W-2 worker, doesn't work 9-to-5, doesn't have 20% down, all of these things mean that there are other programs out there and still at really good rates, whether you're buying or refinancing. All of that is out there and you can take advantage of it. One of the people we bring to the show each time we have, I guess, need for it, usually once a quarter we bring Wendy on. She's Wendy Van Wessel from Kind Lending. We try to ask Wendy and prognosticate a little bit about great programs that are out there, what's Kind doing, and what's the mood in the lending community. Wendy, how are you?
I am fine, Jeff, and how about yourself?
You know, I'm okay. Actually, I had a little bit of an issue this week. I had, I had to do a colonoscopy. That's right. Everybody out there who has never done one, yes, they're out there. They're coming. They're coming for you, too. So I had to do that. I had a flu shot. You know, it's just one of those medical weeks where I know people my age, that's all we talk about. But how are you?
I am just wonderful. Thank you very much, and I'm happy to be here in California, and I have to say what you said in the beginning of the show is 100% true. There is a lot of equity out there in your homes because the values of the homes have gone up so much.
Right.
You have a lot of equity in your homes. So that means refinancing, getting some cash out. If you want to, no MI because you'd be at 80% or under because of your equity. You wanted to talk about different programs?
Yes.
You know where you want to go with this.
Okay, so you hit upon a good one. A lot of people don't realize when they get a loan and, oh, yeah, it's 10% down. Yeah, well, you're going to be paying, or at least the lender will be paying, mortgage insurance, and that's going to be reflected in your rate. Or if you're in an FHA deal where you have less than 20% equity, you're certainly going to be paying FHA insurance as well. Tell people how they can get rid of that insurance, especially with equity going up in their home.
Well, there's a lot of options out there, first of all. If you have enough equity and you're 80% or under, you don't have to worry about MI. If you have MI, you can do lender-paid MI where it's put into the loan, or you can do a monthly-paid MI. And if you're conventional, once you hit 80%, you can request the MI to go away. If you do an FHA, if you have 90% or under when you start your loan, after 11 years, the MI can go away. Otherwise, it is for the life of the FHA loan that you would have MI. There's a difference between FHA and conventional loans and MI. We do have some options, though. There is something called a piggyback second, and it's also called a HELOC.
Okay.
So if you wanted to, you could make your first, your rate and term, your 80% or under, and have no MI. On the second that you would have would be a 10-year interest-only, amortized over 30-year HELOC. If you wanted it for up to $500,000, you could do it, or whatever you needed to make your wishes come true. And this would take away the MI on the first, but it would also be interest only for the first 10 years. And you could pay off and then retake out the monies if you wanted to, just like a credit card, for the first 10 years of that loan. They work really, really well. I also like our jumbo loans, which don't have MI. They go to $2 million. And if it's an owner-occupied or second home, there is no limit on the cash out, as long as your loan officer can get for you what they call AUS, Automated Underwriting System, from either Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac, with an approved ineligible just for the loan amount. You wouldn't have any MI. You can have up to 10 properties because it's underwritten like Fannie Mae. There's less in reserves. And there is no limit on the cash out. So I like that one. If it's non-owner occupied, there is a limit of $350.
Wow, that's a lot of information.
I thought I'd pause.
No, that's good. But the reason is because a lot of people get lost in, you know, the mortgage talk. Like, you know, where am I? How do I fit in? You know, so let's break down just a simple FHA loan. Someone who has enough equity to say they have 20% in their house, how do they get rid of it? Do they have to refinance out of that FHA loan into a conventional loan?
Either that or they have to wait 11 years on an FHA loan.
I see. What are you seeing? What are people doing? Are they just because
they would probably refinance out of an FHA
right.
loan. I don't think they want to wait 11 years because the rates are still darn good.
Now, is there talk of removing this lifetime, because this hasn't been around all that long, 5 years, 6 years that we've seen FHA insurance for the life of the loan? I guess it's when the FHA pool of insurance began to dwindle that they began to say, hey, we've got to replenish, so we need to obviously have this for the life of the loan. Do we see that ending or not?
I would say that HUD, who does the FHA loans, is interested in protecting HUD, especially with the new CFPB and the changes that are going down.
Yep.
I think that they're going to protect themselves. Now, we just are going to announce on Monday that on our FHA loans, we'll go down to a 580 FICO score.
Okay, that's good. That's good news to know, because I know a lot of people still, because of the cost of the houses, are having difficulty coming up with, you know, enough percentage down to get rid of mortgage insurance, so why not just go FHA and only put down 3.5%?
And I think that Kind Lending is getting that, and Glenn Stearns in particular. I think that he knows, and we see, that there are a lot of refinances out there, but we need to have different programs. So we're looking for the debt servicing, meaning that if you had a non-owner occupied and rent paid for the mortgage, that you could do that and not have to prove anything else. But we now have what we call Refi Now and Refi Possible. So it's Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and it allows higher LTV. It also allows up to a 65% debt-to-income ratio. That means that when you make $5,000 a month, that you don't want your bills to be over 45% of that, usually. That gives you a good, okay, we like this loan kind of thing. So that's what the debt-to-income ratio is. But this one allows you to go up to 65%. If you look up your property and you look up the median income, and you are within 70% of that, then you qualify for that loan. So there's things out there that allow you to split your loan, so it's not a cash out, so you can go higher with the first and the piggyback second, the Refi Now and the Refi Possible from Fannie and Freddie. You have your VA loans that now go 100% cash out, and the FHA loans that go to 96.5. So there's a lot of options for you out there, and thank goodness the equity is high in our properties now.
Yes, it is. You know, the federal government, the way they're going now, new administration, what's happening in Washington, not only with the CFPB, but a lot of the regulators, we seem to be in an environment whereby regulation is going to be done more stringently, and we will get an education as what's to be expected when, in fact, somebody gets into trouble. That's when we're going to know as an industry. That scares a lot of people in the industry and also drives up costs because there's also more risk without knowing. Where do you think the industry is headed, both on issues like discrimination, on issues whereby we might be able to see more dollars for housing, i.e. they talked about this 20-year mortgage whereby the government would pick up a certain amount of your mortgage on a monthly basis so it would get low-income people into housing. What do you see is the climate that we're going into, especially now that we're fully into the new Biden administration and what's going on in Washington and how that's going to affect us, especially now when it looks like with taper and everything else, rates are going to go up?
I think that the wave of the future is going to look to make sure that the minorities are represented at a certain percentage rate. That's what their target is. And I think the gentleman that took over from the CFPB is very into that. I think that they call it redlining or reverse redlining. I think that they're going to make sure that none of that is done, and they're going to look to make sure that it's evenly done. Remember when they had the stated loans?
Yep.
And we got in trouble? I think that that's what they were doing, too. They were looking at straight percentages of what the nationality or race was, and they had to make sure that everybody had the right amount.
You saw
qualify.
That.
I think they're looking for that evenness right now, and that's their goal. That's one of their main goals.
You saw that bank in Indiana, right? They got busted for that, or at least they're getting sued for it, and they've denied all charges, but it's about redlining in Indiana, the biggest bank in that state.
Correct. Yeah. I think that the CFPB, the only way they make their money is through lawsuits and fining people. They're going to look to see that people are doing everything on the up and up. So that's good. I think NMLS, although a lot of people in our industry consider it a pain in the derriere every year and have to go through that 8-hour course, I think it stopped the shysters from moving from state to state that took advantage of people. So in that respect, I liked it. As a matter of fact, I'm getting my NMLS license for Nevada because
Great.
one of the only states that doesn't allow AE to work unless they have their NMLS license. So.
Yeah, I know. It's the regulatory aspects of our industry get more and more strict on the front end, which means the loans are probably better, but on the back end, not so much. And certainly the regulatory efforts of the new head of the CFPB and new head of the FCC really return us to a democratic way by which they think regulation and that people are getting ripped off. I'm not sure that's true. The availability of capital is really what determines whether we're going to have a successful mortgage market or not. I don't know if that's the way we do it. Anyway, we're up against it. You want to tell people how they can get a hold of you? You have so much information, quality information about good loans. Let them know how they can get in touch with you.
We have lots of different options for you, and we're going to be getting even more in the future. I think that Kind Lending will be there for you, and the loan officers at Malibu are wonderful in their knowledge. My name is Wendy Van Wessel. I work for Kind Lending. My number is 310-457-4396. Call me or email me at wvanwessel@kindlending.com anytime you like.
Wendy Van Wessel, you are the best. Thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thanks, Jeff. Have a great day.
And you do, too. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. We'll be right back with more in just a moment. For more information on today's topic, email Jeff Barton at info@MalibuFunding.net. Now, back to The Mortgage Voice with your host, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for tuning into the show. Thanks very much for coming on. Each and every week, we bring to you information about what happens in the mortgage market, in the real estate market, how things are happening in the world that affect your decisions, buy and sell, refinance. All things affect what happens in the economy, and the economy itself is directly going to affect what's going on with the mortgage rates. Most people, when they look for loans and they look to shop for loans, all they think about is the rate. But there is so many other different things that you need to do and think about exactly when you want to buy that house or you want to get that refi, you want to make advantage or take advantage of the equity that's already built into your house. Maybe, put somebody through school, save money for some medical bills. There's all kinds of reasons why you need to do refi. It's not just to lower your payments. And we bring to you each and every week people that know more, way more than I do, have been doing it a long time. And from Colorado today, we bring another loan officer from Malibu Funding, Sarah Liang. Sarah, how are you?
I'm good. How are you, Jeff?
I'm just fine. Thank you very much. And how's the weather out there?
Actually, we're going to have a snow.
You're going to have a what?
Pretty cold right here. Snow.
Oh, snow. Oh, my gosh. I don't want snow. And, you know,
that's usually the snow's coming on October.
I see. I had no idea. All right. So you're in a state that we have not had on. Usually we go to, you know, as you know, Malibu's in about 13, 14 different states. So we bring loan officers and people from those different areas. Tell us a little bit about mortgage lending there in Colorado and what kind of products are popular with your borrowers.
I have some clients not only from the local, but also from different states. Our top of products right now is we call it investment, the DSCR loan, which means like for the investment property.
Right.
It's very easy to qualify. We don't need to check. We only check like a limited documentation. We don't need to verify the income documentation. It's all based on the investment property rental survey. This is a really good product. As well, we all know that it's the end of the year, and a lot of people switch their buying power to like a holiday season.
I see.
But you know, our lender right now is offering a very good product, like what I mentioned, this DSCR product, which really can help our investors to get their loan easier than the regular conventional loan.
So the DSCR loan is a loan by which the rental of that particular unit or apartment or building pays and services the loan. So therefore, there's not a lot of out-pocket or out-of-pocket costs for the borrower. Is that right?
Right. So usually, basically, it's you can fit in 1 to 4 units property.
Okay. Okay. What else?
And then the interest rate is very competitive right now. So if we know that for like a regular conventional investment property, and the interest rate is like about like 3 point something, and for our DSCR loan, since we don't check the income documentation, and the interest rate is also like 3 point something. The par is 3.75, depending on your credit score and your down payment as well.
Okay, so let's get into the nitty gritty. What kind of down payment? What kind of credit score do you need?
The minimum down payment is 25%.
Okay.
And if your credit score is above 760.
Okay, that's an excellent credit score. So these loans, to get the best pricing, you need 25% down, about a 750 to 760 credit score in order to get the best possible
rate. Right, but even though you have less than like 740, between 740 to 760, you still can get like a very competitive rate, like 3.875. Or if you are willing to buy down some point, and then we can still do the 3.75 interest rate.
Now, you do loans also in Florida and down in Texas and some other states. Are you seeing differences in the way buyers are reacting to the, the really high real estate prices in different areas?
Right. So in Colorado, compared to Colorado in Texas and Florida, Colorado their housing price is a little bit higher than Texas and Florida.
Okay.
I think that's because the property tax. As we all know, that Texas have a higher property tax there. So in terms of for the investor, people will tend to want to buy some properties with the lower property tax.
Oh, I see. Of course.
Even though in Colorado, the housing price is a little more than in Texas or Florida. But, of course, Florida and and Texas is also a good state to for investment also.
Yeah, is it because Florida and Texas are warmer states, or what? Colorado has those great skiing areas, and you know it's a terrific state for, you know, many many recreational things as well. So it's interesting that you, are you seeing mostly these DSCR loans in Colorado versus Florida and Texas because of the tax issue?
Yes, probably tax. Of course, it's another stuff that. So in Florida, because a lot of people, and then they wanted to buy houses in Florida and then to do their, like, a vacation home or investment.
Mm-hmm.
And it depends on the area you're going to purchase it. Some DSCR loan, and then they're able to do it in Florida. In some area, they are not allowed to because maybe their community is not allowed for the investor to get into their area.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I hadn't even thought of that. Of course that's right, especially in certain communities where it's an older community or it's a, you know, a lower income communities or some communities that they just would rather have owner-occupied people there. Does it make a difference to the appraisal if there's more or less people who own their own homes and live there? And does that make a difference on the appraisal when they do it?
Yeah, of course. Because appraisal usually is based on the sales compared for the neighborhood or the community.
Right.
So, yeah, if you're living in, like, a place that they don't have that much comparison, for the sales comparison, they're a little bit hard to appraise the value, actually.
Right.
Specific from the market right now.
Are you seeing more or less buyers than you did 2 or 3 months ago? I mean, if we see more real estate on the market because it's the end of the year and maybe rates might be going up a little bit?
So I think always the demand are always more than the inventory right now. The inventory is still very low, and because of the last quarter of the year, I see some of the sellers, they wanted to celebrate their holiday right now, and then they just put a hold on their house, and then probably they're going to sell their house probably, you know, like the beginning of next year.
Right.
Not the end of this the end of the year.
So you see maybe a return to a more normal way people buy and sell houses, i.e. there's a spring buying season, and in the fall when the holidays roll around, people, you know, take their properties off the market or wait until the next year.
Right.
Excellent. Sarah, listen, we have about a minute left. Could you tell people who are listening to the show how to get in touch with you if they need a great loan in any number of these states that you do business?
Sure. My phone number, it is 720-435-8695.
Excellent. Thank you very much. And thanks for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. And we'll have you back soon. I want to do that again.
Sure. Thank you for having me here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. That's Sarah Liang from Malibu Funding. This is Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. And we'll be right back.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. We'll be right back with more in just a moment. For more information on today's topic, email Jeff Barton at info@MalibuFunding.net. Now, back to The Mortgage Voice with your host, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for tuning into the show. Thanks for listening. Hey, listen, we're on a bunch of different radio stations. We're on 5 radio stations in 3 different states, from Albuquerque all the way up to middle of California in Lake Tahoe area, Southern California, where we have a couple of radio stations, and out in Las Vegas, Nevada. We're also on a number of different podcasts. I think we're on 8 or 9. Daryl, you have a list of those for us? That'd be great.
I sure do. This thing over here, the thing jumped on me. Here we go. Apple Podcasts, Google Music Play, Spotify, Spreaker, Stitcher, iHeartMedia, Radio.com, and, of course, YouTube and
Podclips.io. Excellent. Podclips.io is a great place to go. It's a new podcast website where a bunch of different podcasters are there. Maybe some you've heard of, maybe some you haven't, but the information is terrific. They have all the usual categories, whether it's health or finance or sports or just general news, all kinds of things there, all different types of viewpoints. You should go check it out, podclips.io. And, of course, we're on YouTube, Jeff Barton, The Mortgage Voice. You go there, see this as well as our daily. We try to get 2-3 days a week where we're on Facebook and LinkedIn, at Jeff6493. That's my Twitter handle. If you go there, we have definite daily postings on what's going on in the marketplace. We try not to get too political on the show, although it's very, very hard, as I was saying in an earlier segment, all things being national now. So if you say one thing in one particular market, it is known everywhere. So why not just broadcast out exactly how you feel and what you feel? The markets don't really care about politics unless it roils, i.e. creates risk. And we talked about that in my earlier segment. And risk is something that nobody likes. The president or the CEO of Chase Manhattan Bank, J.P. Morgan Chase, is Jamie Dimon. Jamie Dimon is one who has talked a lot about inflation. He's talked a lot about many things. I mean, you may remember him from when 2008 happened. He was in the movie Too Big to Fail. He was, the CEO of J.P. Morgan Chase at the time, played by Jeff Daniels, I believe, and did a wonderful job. However, he is still in charge over Chase. He's talking about inflation now. We know that inflation is a bad thing. We talked about why, well, not why, but how in California specifically, we've seen the inflation of gas prices really eat into the paycheck. Now, across the nation, we've seen that, maybe not to the extent of California, but we've also seen food prices go up, the cost of just regular products go up. He says, and I agree with him, that inflation will be around for a while. It may be larger than we think next year. However, the supply chain problem, i.e. the bottleneck, they call it, which is why we've seen, 40 container ships off the coast of Long Beach and San Pedro Harbor in Los Angeles, or even up the river in Mississippi or out east, where we see large container ships, dozens of them off the coast of many of our big ports in the U.S., that's a bottleneck because we don't have longshoremen to unload. We don't have trucks to drive them away. We're seeing a shortage in many, many different areas. And one of the reasons is we can't get the products to market. We can't get the products to the suppliers. Through what they call the supply chain, this particular bottleneck drives prices up because people want, when they want it. I blame this all on the Walmartization of America back in the 80s. When Walmart first began to grow, and we saw Sam's Club and a lot of these products, which were made in China, sold cheaply to those particular outlets in the U.S., and the consumer got hooked on going big. Go to the big box store to get what you wanted. Transferred easily the last 20 years to Amazon, where if you can't get it at Amazon, you can't get it. The way it used to happen is you would get in your car and drive down and find something at a local store or be the one that ferreted out that great sale at a particular location that nobody else knew about. Well, now everybody knows about everything, but we got hooked on cheap goods. Now let's talk about China just for a quick second. China's in trouble economically. And the reason for that is the biggest builders in China. China went through a building boom. We've all seen the videos of the superhighways, of the bullet trains, of the skyscraper buildings all across every metropolis. They have 100 cities, over 1 million people in each. Think about that. Some cities, 10, 20 million people, like Beijing. So if you're looking at grand scale of what China had been portraying itself, especially when we saw the birdcage at the Olympics 2-3 years ago, and we're going to see another China Olympics very soon, what we neglected to see is how was all this being paid for? What we were told was the burgeoning middle class in China. What we were really seeing was builders overbuilding and borrowing the money to do it. I read an article, and I just want to tell you where to get this article because it's fascinating. And what's happening there is possibly a trigger for a worldwide deflation in real estate. And the reason real estate, some say in the U.S., is overbuilt, not underbuilt. But first, this particular article by Quinton Webb And Stella Yifengi is, where did I get this? I got it on either Housing Wire or Mortgage News Daily. But it's fascinating. It talked about the building in China by Evergrande and another company, which just went delinquent on the payment of the interest on their debt. Now, $200 million may seem like a drop in the bucket. That was one of them. And the other one was, you know, $200 trillion and $250 trillion, not trillion, billion dollars. Now, these particular falling behind in payments, I said billion, I meant million, seems like nothing, right? But in China, the amount of money which has been lent out during the largest building boom in the world's history is $5 trillion. $5 trillion that a debt is coming due. Now, all these buildings, a lot of them aren't lived in. A lot of them can't get people to move in because there is a problem with employment in China, just like there's a problem with employment in the U.S., in Europe, in South America. The pandemic has pointed out that people can stay home or just retire, which is a worldwide issue. Now, when you've got $5 trillion in debt and people stop showing up to rent your apartments and you stop paying the bill on that, guess what happens? A lot of these bonds that were sold as a direct result of these buildings being built on the promise of people renting them out, it's not going to happen. They're going to go under, and it may drag you and the U.S. economy under, too. Very important to understand and to watch. Don't forget about it. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for listening this week, and we'll see you next time.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. For more on today's topic, visit www.malibufunding.net.